This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music and more. And we have a bit of music and a bit of the more part of that on today's show. Coming up in the later portion, we're going to feature an event happening in Charleston called The Beats Go On, readings from the Beat Generation accompanied by live jazz music. It's an event from Charleston Alley Theater. We've got three of the poet readers who were involved. They brought some music with them, and we'll hear a little bit about that on the later portion of the show. The first part of the show involves two members of the Illinois Brass Quintet, all faculty members at the University of Illinois School of Music. They're giving their annual Halloween Spooktacular this Saturday evening at the Krannert Center in Urbana, along with a number of guest performers. We'll have some samples of the music on that show and some conversation about it as well. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That's a performance by Michael Murray of the famous Toccata and Fugue in D minor of Johann Sebastian Bach. Ooh, it's Halloween, or just about. He was performing on the Skinner Schlicker organ at First Congregational Church in Los Angeles. These things are important to organists. That's by way of introduction to our conversation with Elliot Chazanoff, trombonist, and Ronald Rahm, trumpet player, both of them members of the Illinois Brass Quintet at the University of Illinois, which gives its sixth annual Halloween Spooktacular this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And needless to say, that music will be on it in an arrangement for quintet by Fred Mills, along with some other scary and some not-so-scary music, and a number of guest performers. So, gentlemen, thanks very much for coming on the show today.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely.
Sixth annual. I know Ronnie, well, maybe. Have you been here that long?
I've been here that long, actually. I've been here. This is my eighth year.
So you both have been in all six of these. Elliot, you've been here for quite a long time.
This is my 19th year.
At the University of Illinois?
Yeah.
Wow. You got here a year before I did then, I think.
Yeah.
1991 is where I came to do conducting, and surely the Illinois Brass Quintet was giving concerts before that, but what was the impetus for doing a spooktacular?
Well, I'd played in a number of orchestras over the years that did Halloween concerts, and it was shortly after the birth of my daughter Lisa, who was 2 years old at the time, and I realized that there really wasn't a family concert in Champaign-Urbana for Halloween. And Halloween is a holiday that everybody enjoys, but particularly the kids who get to go out in costume and trick-or-treat. So I talked to my colleagues, and we came up with the idea and agreed on a format, and we've been doing it ever since.
The quintet doesn't have technically a leader, does it, or does it?
Not really. I sort of serve as sort of the sort of ad hoc manager of the group, but we all sort of come together and talk things through and come to a unified decision on just about everything we do. And this was something we were all pretty enthusiastic about, and we've had as many as 1,500 people at this concert.
Really? No kidding.
Over the years. It varies. This weekend we've got the Michigan game to contend with, plus it is actually the first time it's ever been on a Halloween. So hopefully it'll give a chance for maybe the kids who've already trick-or-treated to show off their costumes and sit down in a warm, dry room and enjoy a concert.
Yeah, do we know what time trick-or-treating is designated for on Saturday?
I believe it ends at 7. That's what I've heard. It's like 5 to 7 or something similar to that. So we're safe that way. So I hope that once the kids are finished trick-or-treating, they'll want to come over and in costume and participate. In fact, we have a costume contest for the kids at 6:30 and a lot of really great prizes for the best costumes. So,
you want to talk about any of the prizes? Maybe this will be incentive for parents who might be listening to drag their kids out after the trick-or-treating.
Well, since we know that everybody everybody eats. All of the prizes this year are food related. We're giving out gift certificates to Sandella's cafe on in Urbana. We're giving out gift certificates to Manolo's Pizza and Empanadas right near the Krannert Center.
And Chipotle is one as well. And so these are our local. Our local people whom we frequent, and they were very kind and forthcoming and saying, yes, we will support your concert. And of course, Elliot did not say that he's done some of the arrangements on these shows. He writes the scripts, he contacts the people. So it's the Illinois Brass Quintet show, but I must tell everybody in public that incidentally, Kevin, you're our host for this.
Incidentally, that seems to be true, yeah.
Incidentally. So
and that'll be a first.
And we're going to have a great time.
I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, you fit right in. You're a brass player in your past life.
And very, very past. And I'm spooky, right?
I wasn't going to say that. Spooky fits.
Yeah, well, I'll try to be as spooky as possible. I was certainly flattered to have been asked. Elliot emailed me, and I thought, oh, well, that should be a lot of fun. So I'm very, yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. Let's hear a little music. This is one of the not very spooky pieces. This is how you're opening your concert, and it's probably with this same arrangement, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Luther Henderson, who arranged many things for the Canadian Brass, and we have with us one of the members of the Canadian Brass, Ronald Rahm. So, and you're on this recording.
I'm on this recording. Yes. Yeah.
This is George Gershwin's "Strike Up the Band" on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Another wonderful arrangement, wonderful performance by the Canadian Brass of Gershwin's Strike Up the Band, Luther Henderson's arrangement, which is the opening piece on Saturday night's 6th Annual Illinois Brass Quintet Halloween Spooktacular at the Krannert Center in Urbana. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and with me today, Ronald Rahm, who is one of the trumpet players in the quintet and also a faculty member at the University of Illinois, as is Elliot Chasnoff, who is the trombonist of the quintet, both of them veterans now of the Spooktacular, and Elliot particularly veteran of the University of Illinois School of Music. Speaking of veterans and not veterans, you have a major personnel change that just happened this year.
Yes, we have Thomas Jostlein, who's joined us from the on horn with the retiring of Kaz Makala. Thomas joined us from the New York Philharmonic, where he was the assistant principal hornist.
That's not a bad gig.
Not a bad gig, but it's not as good as this gig.
Well, apparently he thought so. Why would you go from a major symphony job, you know, which I think most people would say, oh, that's the pinnacle of what you can do with, you know, as a brass player, or many people would say, to come teach college?
Well, I think, you know, over the years and knowing many, many orchestral players, one of the things about orchestral playing that's very limiting is the fact that, first of all, in the repertoire, there are very few opportunities to solo in a free soloistic manner. Most of the time, we are sort of indentured in a way to the interpretation of the orchestra, of the conductor. So there's not quite as much musical freedom. And on top of that, just logistically, the orchestra locks you into a schedule, and it's very difficult to be able to go out and do recitals or master classes without a great deal of notice because subs must be found and engaged and there's expenses involved. So orchestras are very, very reticent to allow players the freedom necessary to go out and do the creative things that all musicians, professional musicians particularly, love to do. We just got back, for instance, the quintet from a tour last week of Michigan. We played at University of Michigan, Michigan State, Eastern Michigan, Bowling Green in Ohio. And that's just, it's just invigorating as a musician to get away from your everyday work and get out there and play and interface with new audiences. And I think the orchestral life is limiting in that way. I mean, it's lucrative, but it's also limiting.
And of course, from an orchestra's point of view, it has to be that way because you're, the identity of the orchestra depends on its personnel. Otherwise, you have no orchestra. So
that's true.
They don't. It's hard to reconcile both. So you got to choose, I guess.
And of course, in the musician's viewpoint, performing is a very kind of a short-term endeavor. You're remembered for your performances, but when you empower series of students over the years to carry on what you've done and carry on what you've brought and help them to find their way musically, you're basically bringing forward something much more powerful that lasts many more generations. So you're doing yourself a great service by being a professor at the university.
And Ronnie, you've been here, I think you just said, 8 years.
This is my 8th year.
How much teaching were you doing before you came to the University of Illinois? Because you were, you know, heavily involved with the Canadian Brass. That was your big thing.
Canadian Brass was, I was on the road 240 days a year with Canadian Brass. So we were doing anywhere from 130 to 160 concerts a year, making 2 CDs a year, doing radio and television performances. So I was a parachutist. They would hire us. We would drop in for 2 days here and 2 days there to do a master class workshop and concert situation, and that was the teaching that I was doing. And of course, when I came to the university, it was a complete change. Now we have a whole trumpet studio full of people who are interested in studying the stuff that we were doing.
And of course, they depend on you weekly for advice, mentoring, counseling.
Absolutely.
And all of that stuff. And if you had tried to teach before, you wouldn't have been very reliable.
That's true. And I think that there's a certain consistency that is appropriate for the students. They need to know what's expected of them and how they can grow. And it's our job to help them to do that.
Well, the U of I has had some really wonderful brass players, certainly in the time that I've been around, which is quite a long time, and credit to all of the brass faculty. I know we're down one trumpet professor with...
Well, we're not actually down one trumpet professor because Jake Walburn is our visiting lecturer, and he's a marvelous teacher. What's not being touted is his skill. He's a wonderful colleague, and he's a marvelous teacher, and he's a wonderful player. And I think everyone will hear.
Well,
that
I knew
this
about
weekend.
The playing
sure,
part.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's great to know. Good.
And we
now have. There was no hole in the horn faculty. It was great that they were able to fill that immediately.
Right.
And Mark Moore is the member of the brass quintet we haven't mentioned. Longtime tuba professor at the University of Illinois. The program, for those just listening in, we're talking with Ronald Rahm, trumpet player, and Elliot Chazanoff, trombonist of the IBQ, in advance of their Halloween Spooktacular this Saturday at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and some spooky, some not-so-spooky music. How did you come up with the program, and how do you manage to include some scary stuff every year? Is it always the same scary stuff, or do you mix it up, or what?
We've actually managed to mix it up pretty well. There are some very standard spooky selections that just happen to also exist in the brass quintet repertoire. But we've also managed to bring some new things in by doing some arrangements and scouting out other pieces. We also really enjoy having with us the Yankee Ridge dancers from Urbana's Yankee Ridge School, which Betty Allen directs, and they come and they've participated on all 6 concerts, and she just basically choreographs a piece that we perform with them in front of us doing some sort of interpretation of the music.
Well, tell me about that group. I hadn't heard of them before, actually, Yankee Ridge Dance Group.
Yeah, the Yankee Ridge Dance Group is part of their cultural enrichment program in Urbana. And Betty Allen is the coordinator of arts and music in the Urbana public schools, particularly the grade schools. And she's trained as a dancer, and she works with these kids on a weekly basis and comes up with the choreography. But it's a wonderful group, and every year these young ladies come in and wow the audience and just do a lot of fun, creative things to the music. It's really...
So
really,
it's an all-girls group.
It's all-girl yes. group. And one of our challenges as the Illinois Brass Quintet is to not watch them, because what they're doing is so much fun that it distracts us from what we have to do, which is play the music.
Yeah, you probably just have to stare into the music stand and let them do their thing and let the audience enjoy the whole
exactly.
effect. You also have a guest quintet, or are they annually on this concert?
Well, we have the graduate brass quintet with us, and actually that's a tradition as well. We've had them joining us every year, and they play along with us, and they join us in spirit as well. And we have that nice youthful enthusiasm, and there's going to be some special activity that I don't want to give it away. I think it'll be really fun.
Okay, that's
it'll
fine.
Really fun. And of course, we also have Dean Graves is going to be narrating.
Robert Graves?
Yes, yeah.
He's of the College of Fine and Applied Arts at the University of Illinois?
Yes, and he's going to be narrating the Animal Ditties, this Tony Plogue piece.
Well, let's come to that in a minute, because I have a different piece queued up. Going back to the program, you were talking about Elliot, and you said some arrangements made specially for this. This is going to be the world premiere of your arrangement of the next piece we're going to hear.
Right. We've all come to know Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain, or Night on Bear Mountain, depending on how you want to translate from the Russian, through Leopold Stokowski's arrangement from the Disney movie Fantasia. And it's become pretty much of a Halloween standard, along with Sorcerer's Apprentice from that same production. But we had actually several years back done a quintet version during the concert, but felt like we wanted to expand that to include the graduate quintet and bring more of the fullness of that original piece to the stage. So this early fall, I sat down and just made it my quest to get this piece done, so the ink wasn't still wet when we sat down to play it, essentially.
You didn't want to be in a Mozartian situation where you're still handing out the parts at rehearsal.
Exactly.
And so you got double the number of players to work with than you otherwise would have had. You told me an interesting story about your dad's relationship to this piece.
Actually, it was my grandfather. Mom's father was a bassist in the Philadelphia Orchestra from 1927 until 1963, and played on the Fantasia soundtrack. The one thing that disappointed my mom when she was a kid was that when she went to see the movie, of course, we all know it opens up with the silhouettes of the musicians and Stokowski on the podium. Well, it is indeed Stokowski on the podium, but the musicians are not the Philadelphia Orchestra. They're actually studio musicians from L.A. because they didn't want to fly the Philadelphia Orchestra to L.A. Too expensive, even in the late 1930s, early 1940s.
But it is the Philadelphia Orchestra actually playing.
Exactly.
Here, however, it's the New York Philharmonic playing the opening of Night on Bald Mountain. Leonard Bernstein's conducting, and in case you don't know the piece by name, you will certainly know it by sound. Just a teaser portion of A Night on Bald Mountain by Modest Mussorgsky in a Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, Tchaikovsky's arrangement, transcription, really just arrangement of Mussorgsky's original, New York Philharmonic led by Leonard Bernstein. You can hear it performed in Elliot Chazanov's arrangement for Double Brass Quintet, the premiere of that transcription, on Saturday, part of the Halloween Spooktacular by the Illinois Brass Quintet and Friends, the University of Illinois Graduate Brass Quintet joining them for that, and Donald Schleicher, who's director of orchestras at the U of I, conducting both that piece and the Gabrielli Sonata Pian e Forte, Soft and Loud, a wonderful piece I remember playing back in seventh grade. I remember Glenn Gould, not the Glenn Gould, but the father of my best friend at the time, decided to get some brass players together from when we were in seventh grade and play this piece. And I actually told my youth orchestra kids this because the brass are working on it now, and I should try to get an email to make sure they come to the concert and hear it. I said, at the time, I thought it was such a dull piece, but I've since come to think it is one of the more exhilarating pieces in music, particularly if it's played well. And I'm sure that when given the level of seventh grade brass playing, that probably explains, at least in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, that probably explains my reaction to it. As I recall, Professor Gould took an exceedingly lugubrious tempo.
Yes. We're going to have an interesting spread of this physical spread. We'll be in the balconies, but opposite balconies on the Kranich
Which was
stage.
The original the way idea. In which it would have been done.
Yes, in St. Mark's Cathedral, when the ships would come in to the port, they would offload all of these wonderful rugs, and they would drape them all over the cathedral, so that the cathedral, which had this extraordinarily long resonance of something like 16 to 17 or 18 seconds, would be cut down to about 6 or 7, and they would play. That's true, and the musicians would play these wonderful pieces, and this is one of the pieces that was played at St. Mark's Cathedral.
Originally, on what kind of instruments?
Basically, they were mostly trombones.
Yes, the sackbut was the predecessor of the trombone, and basically, much smaller bore instrument with a very small bell. So the net result is a sound that's much much less resonant, much, much less full. But for that kind of space, I'm sure it would have sounded very resonant in that space. And the dryness of the tone would have afforded better articulation sounds in that kind of space. And, Gabrielli conceived the piece for those kinds of instruments, sackbuts and cornetti, and, cornetti basically being the predecessor of the trumpet, but almost a cross between a woodwind and a brass instrument because of it's made out of wood and it has holes that you cover up to change pitch. So it would have been a much more subdued sound than you'll hear on Saturday, but I think the spirit is the same.
And it is a different acoustic. It's a resonant acoustic, but a different acoustic at the Kranich Center.
Absolutely. Yes.
With not quite the long reverberation. Well, we need to actually wrap up our conversation because I've got another very interesting set of folks coming in for the later portion of Live and Local today, second portion of the show. It's a Charleston Alley Theater production of The Beats Go On, readings from the Beat Generation accompanied by live jazz music, which sounds rather interesting to me. And we've got some of those readers with us who are going to come in the studio in just a few minutes. Our broadcast today on FM 90.9 is funded in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, a state agency. And coming up at 1 o'clock, I'll have a weather forecast for you, 101 news headlines from NPR. Julie Amacher has classical music for you at 106. My guests on this portion of the show, Ronald Rahm, trumpet player, and Elliot Chazanov, trombonist, both of the University of Illinois School of Music faculty and members of the Illinois Brass Quintet, which is giving its 6th annual Halloween Spooktacular Saturday night at 7:30. I will be privileged to be the host in some sort of costume, apparently. Let's go out with one of the more unusual pieces that are on this program. Want to give us a quick intro, Elliot?
The Animal Ditties was written by Tony Plogue, who's a was a trumpet player, but now more of a composer, written to the poetry of Ogden Nash. The poetry existed first. So Tony took the movements and very creatively took the poetry and very creatively wrote music that reflects the text. And it's just charming and funny and just a hoot to play.
And we're going to hear three examples. I think maybe I'll throw in a fourth one. The duck, the rhinoceros, I think I'll put in the wasp, and we'll end up with the cuckoo. This is a performance by the St. Louis Brass Quintet. You'll hear it played by the Illinois Brass Quintet, narrated by Robert Graves, and featuring the Yankee Ridge Dance Group, directed by Betty Allen. A several-minute extravaganza on Saturday night at 7:30 at the Crandon Center. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in today.
Thank you.
Behold the duck. It does not cluck. A cluck it lacks.
There's wives. Therefore, they cynically disparage everybody else's marriage.
Those are three movements from the Animal Ditties of Anthony Ploeg, played by the St. Louis Brass Quintet. And you can hear them all played. There's quite a few of them, played by the Illinois Brass Quintet, Saturday night, part of their Halloween Spooktacular program, 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is supported by the Music Shop and Pro Sound Center, now in their new location at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign. The Music Shop specializes in the sales and rental of band and orchestra instruments, digital keyboards, guitars, amps, and drums, along with a wide variety of sheet music. This program is your connection to local music and more, and we've got a little of both the music and the more on this portion of the show. Charleston Alley Theater is presenting a program called The Beats Go On, readings from the Beat Generation accompanied by live jazz music. Three performances this weekend, Friday and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Charleston Alley Theater in Charleston, located at 718 Monroe. We have some of the readers along with us of the poetry. They are David Radovich and Bailey Young, and I'm going to mispronounce your name.
Diva
Markellis. And David, I know you are a poet.
That's right.
And what else at Eastern? You teach at Eastern,
don't
you?
I teach in the English department and write plays.
And Diva?
I also teach at Eastern, and I'm a nonfiction memoirist writer.
Nonfiction memoirist.
I have a book coming out about my Lithuanian childhood next October.
And Bailey Young, you are a historian.
Yes, I'm a medieval historian. I'm also an archaeologist. I excavate a castle in Belgium. But I was an English major as an undergraduate a long time ago.
You don't look medieval. You look like more recent vintage than that.
Medieval is really very up to date.
Oh, we could start a long conversation about that, I guess, couldn't we?
Yes, we could.
But we're here to talk about other things. How did you all get, first of all, are you involved in Charleston Alley Theater otherwise, or were you just brought in for this particular production?
No, we've done this. David and I created a staged reading about 10 years ago for the first time. And we've done things like this at the Charleston Alley Theater off and on over the last decade.
So we did one of the Brownings. We did a Gertrude Stein evening and a Walt Whitman reading. And
Yeats.
And Yeats and Polish poets. And typically we like to do some choral reading, individual readers twos and threes. And we have a set and costumes typically, so we make it a nice evening.
And is it always, this one is with music, is it normally with music or sometimes yes, sometimes not?
This is the first time we've ever done it with live music.
Live music. We've used tape music before, so this is...
We just thought that the beats go together with jazz, and our colleague in the music department, Paul Johnston, who's a wonderful musician, agreed with us and is bringing his own group. He's going to be playing himself.
You know, this is, I'm actually glad you guys are here because I've always seen the beat generation, the beat poets, and I've read definitions, but I never really have understood where does that term come from.
Oh my, you would ask that.
Well, it's an obvious question,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is an obvious question. Bailey has the answer.
Well, I can tell you this. The great moment of beat generation was a reading in the City Lights Bookshop in San Francisco in what, about 1957 or 8, when Allen Ginsberg read his poem Howl for the first time in public. The term was used a little bit earlier, particularly when Jack Kerouac published his novel On the Road. As to who first used it there, I'd have to do some research. I don't know.
Well, there's using the term, and then there's the question of why that term?
I think part of it is the poetry is very rhythmic, and that along with the jazz of that age, the emphasis was not on this kind of sentimental imagery, but the sound of the words. And as you'll see, if you come to the performance, the poetry is very energetic and often has a very strong beat.
Well, we're going to find that out here. Why don't we start finding out right now? You've brought how many things for us to potentially read?
Well, a couple pieces. Diva can read a piece from Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
Yes, I told David and Bailey that I wouldn't participate if I couldn't read this poem. It's my favorite poem, and it's called The World is a Beautiful Place. It's by Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
And are we accompanying this with the music or not yet?
Well, some of the poems we have musical accompaniment with and others not. And
this is a not.
This is a not.
Okay.
The world is a beautiful place to be born into. If you don't mind happiness not always being so very much fun, if you don't mind a touch of hell now and then just when everything is fine, because even in heaven they don't sing all the time, the world is a beautiful place to be born into. If you don't mind some people dying all the time or maybe only starving some of the time, which isn't half bad if it isn't you. Oh, the world is a beautiful place to be born into. If you don't mind a few dead minds in the higher places, or a bomb or two now and then in your upturned faces, or if such other improprieties as our name brand societies pray to with its men of distinction and its men of extinction and its priests and other patrolmen and its various segregations and congressional investigations and other constipations that our fool flesh is heir to. Yes, the world is the best place of all for a lot of such things as making the fun scene and making the love scene and making the sad scene and singing low songs and having inspirations and walking around looking at everything and smelling flowers and goosing statues and even thinking and kissing people and making babies and wearing pants and waving hats and dancing and going swimming in rivers on picnics in the middle of the summer and just generally living it up. Yes, but then right in the middle of it comes the smiling mortician.
I guess part of the idea is of punchlines is you don't expect them.
That's right.
Yeah. Although one could have. I guess, listening to that. Lawrence Ferlinghetti, was that?
Yes.
And it was called?
The World is a Beautiful Place.
Read on Live and Local by Diva Markellis, who teaches at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston and is one of 6 readers going to be participating in Charleston Alley Theater's presentation of The Beats Go On, readings from the Beat Generation accompanied by live jazz music. And I'm still going to have to look up Beat. and the term, I guess, because we're coming to, you know, some possibilities.
Well, it also comes from the word beatnik, but it's hard to know whether.
But that begs the question, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
And we're expansive in the reading because we'll be doing some poetry by Gary Snyder, who isn't often thought of necessarily as a beat poet, as well as Anne Waldman and Diane DePrima. So we're inclusive in our programming here.
Well, and you're talking to somebody who doesn't know poets very well, so those are all names that just went right over my head. So it's okay, as far as I'm concerned, to include other people because I didn't know they wouldn't be included in the canon in the first place. Any contemporary poets included?
Well, Anne Waldman is still going strong.
Is she? Okay.
And she did a reading at the Dadna Fine Arts Center at Eastern Illinois University last spring, I believe, and I think she's one of the few. Gary Snyder is still working. Of course, the others are not with us, but.
And I think most of the poems have a very modern feel, as the poem I read, but others. Even stronger revolutionary overtones, a lot of kind of jazz imagery. So I think they read very modern.
So, I mean, you just sort of maybe helped answer or expand on Bailey's comment earlier that that jazz seems to fit with these particular poets, mm-hmm. hence using jazz in the production.
Yes.
Who are the live performers? Is it a group? Is it a few people together? Or where did you find the players?
Are you talking about the actors or the musicians?
Musicians.
The musicians, there are three students, and then Paul Johnston is professor of music at Eastern Illinois University. So it's a jazz combo with drums, keyboard, bass, and tenor sax.
And you have brought along one musical example. This is one of the pieces that will be...
That's right.
Played by them?
Yes.
A Thelonious Monk tune, and somebody's reading something to it, I assume.
Mm-hmm. This Autumn Leaves?
No, this is rhythming.
Yeah.
We're looking down the page.
Yes. I don't have the program right in front of me.
There are some pieces which are by themselves as... breaking up the different parts of the program, and I think that this is one of those.
One of the music interludes.
Yes.
It's an interlude.
So here's a sample of that.
Yes.
It's Rhythm Aning is the name of the tune by Thelonious Monk. We're hearing it from his album called Crisscross, and it is that combo. Monk on piano, Charlie Rouse on tenor sax, Frankie Dunlop is the drummer, and John Orr, hoping I'm saying his name right, is the bassist here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Monk, piano, Charlie Rouse, tenor sax, Frankie Dunlop, drums, John Orr is the bassist in Thelonious Monk's tune called Rhythmaning. And I've heard that tune before and I never really knew the name, but then I'm not very good at putting those things together anyway. That was heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And coming up in about 9 minutes, we'll have a weather forecast for you. Just after that, a newscast and classical music at 12:06, hosted by Julie Amacher. Our program today is made possible with support from Parkland Art Gallery at Parkland College. The gallery's exhibitions and educational programs are offered free of charge to the public. Artist receptions, interviews with artists, and other special programs are offered to interpret the exhibits. On this portion of the show, we have three guests with us, David Radovich, Bailey Young, and Diva Markellis, all from Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, and all of them performing in Charleston Alley Theater's presentation called The Beats Go On. Readings from the Beat Generation accompanied by live jazz music, and we're going to live up to that advertisement here in just a moment with some reading accompanied by music by Lester Young, played by Charlie Parker. And David Radovich will read us that. Now, this is, I think you said, from Jack Kerouac on the Road.
That's exactly right.
You're not going to be reading the whole book.
No, just an excerpt. Right.
I have never gotten around to reading that book. One of these days, I guess it's really got to happen. For those like myself who might be in the same boat, give us an intro to the book a little bit.
Well, it's in a lot of ways a travel memoir, and it's very much a story of leaving the East Coast and traveling through the Midwest out to California and on the way back. And we selected two parts of it to frame our reading. One part at the beginning talks about Chicago and then in traveling first to Chicago and Illinois and enjoying that experience. And then at the conclusion of the reading, we'll do this excerpt that I'll read from coming back from California and talking about the jazz that they encounter in Chicago.
Any particular reason you chose this specific piece of music?
Well, because of the reference to all the jazz and Thelonious Monk, Charlie Parker, and others that we are featuring in the evening.
But Lester leaps in, no specific reason for that particular tune.
Well, Lester Young is mentioned.
Oh, he is, okay.
And Lester Leaps In, I believe, is also mentioned. So
specifically. Well, I'm looking forward to hear how this sort of works out here. So this is from where in On the Road?
This is from near the end,
okay.
Chapter 10.
And the reader is David Radovich, the performer here. Performers, Miles Davis. Well, you know, I'm not sure who all. I should look and see who exactly is playing. I'll do that while we're looking. But in any event, it's Lester Young's tune called Lester Leaps In, with Charlie Parker and others, here on Live and Local. And I will do my best to balance the sound.
Then here came a gang of young bop musicians, carrying their instruments out of cars. They piled right into a saloon and we followed them. They set themselves up and started blowing. There we were. The leader was a slender, drooping, curly-haired, pursy-mouthed tenor man, thin of shoulder, draped loose in a sport shirt, cool in the warm night, self-indulgence written in his eyes. Who picked up his horn and frowned in it and blew, cool and complex, and was dainty, stamping his foot to catch ideas, and ducked to miss others, and said blow very quietly when the other boys took solos. Then there was Prez, a husky, handsome blonde like a freckled boxer, meticulously wrapped inside his shark-skin plaid suit with the long drape and the collar falling back and the tie undone for exact sharpness and casualness. Sweating and hitching up his horn and writhing into it, and a tone just like Lester Young himself. You see, man, Prez has the technical anxieties of a money-making musician. He's the only one who's well-dressed. See him grow worried when he blows a clinker. But the leader, that cool cat, tells him not to worry and just blow and blow. The mere sound and serious exuberance of the music is all he cares about. He's an artist. He's teaching young Prez the boxer. Now the others did. The third sax was an alto, 18-year-old, cool, contemplative, young Charlie Parker-type Negro from high school with a broad gash mouth, taller than the rest, grave. He raised his horn and blew into it quietly and thoughtfully and elicited bird-like phrases and architectural Miles Davis logics. These were the children of the great bop innovators.
David Radovich reading to Lester Young's music. And Lester Young is Prez. I mean, that was his nickname. Am I remembering that right? It's funny how they always said, I mean, there's the Duke, there's the President, mm-hmm. there's the Count, there's, I forget what some of the others were of all these jazz players who get these honorifics. On this performance, Roy Eldridge is a trumpet player, Tommy Turk trombone, I can hardly read this here, Flip Phillips, Lester Young, both playing tenor sax, Hank Jones, piano, this is a big band here, Ray Brown, bass, Buddy Rich, drums, and solos, which we're not hearing too much of, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That is part of a much longer reading that will frame this program called The Beats Go On. David Radovich is with us here on Live and Local today with Bailey Young and Diva Markellis. Who are the other folks doing the readings, and where do they come from?
Deborah Valentino from Charleston. She and I do a great duet on with Ann Waldman's Makeup on Empty Space.
And D. Craig Bonnai, who is a supervisor at Consolidated.
And Jeffrey Lynch, who is the dean of the College of Arts and Humanities and also a professor of English.
Sounds like you better get him involved. You
know, absolutely.
For brownie points, right?
Yes. Well, he has some very wonderful lines, which I
we can't
think
really
we'll
read on
try to
on
read
radio.
On the radio.
So is this, I mean, since you told me while we were listening to some of the music earlier that some of Allen Ginsberg's Howl is going to be on there, which is not appropriate for radio, does that suggest that this event is not appropriate for certain age of children, or what would you suggest?
I think you could say that, yes.
Yeah.
Certainly parental advisory here.
Yeah.
Do you have an age recommendation or
parents'
user
my
discretion?
Son. Okay. My son, who's a college freshman.
Well, college freshmen, you're exposed to everything,
absolutely.
Whether you want them to be or not. So that's probably okay.
I think younger people will enjoy this. Teenagers, people in their 20s, really everybody except for younger children.
So parents just use discretion. But
exactly.
But get them a babysitter and come to the show.
That's right.
In other words, Bailey, do you have anything to read today, or are you off the hook?
Let me read you just the beginning of Allen Ginsberg's Howl. I promise you there are no words that are unsuitable here.
Good, because I won't pay the fine.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn looking for an angry fix, angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night, who poverty and tatters and hollow-eyed and high sat up smoking in the supernatural darkness of cold water flats floating across the tops of cities, contemplating jazz. And just there is where the quartet is going to come in underneath the rest of Howl. And this is a piece that we do chorally, and we move around on the stage also. So it's not your idea of a reading where the guy
it's
just
static.
Stands behind the lectern and maybe moves
and you
arms
said some costuming as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there'll be some berets on beatniks and things like that.
Some
there
berets.
Are costumes. There is a beret.
Some leather jackets.
Okay. Well, we
sandals.
We won't give away who's wearing what, but we do thank you for coming up to the station today for the program. David Radovich, Bailey Young, and Diva Markellis presenting with several others and a jazz combo, The Beats Go On, readings from the Beat Generation accompanied by live jazz music presented by Charleston Alley Theater. In Charleston, performances are Friday and Saturday at 7:30, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And for tickets, you can telephone Area 217-345-2287 or charlestonalleytheater.com. Thank you all for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Kevin.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. On tomorrow's program, Tito Carrillo of the University of Illinois Latin Jazz Ensemble, which is performing in Urbana Thursday night, and perhaps another guest or two as well. It's going to be a mostly cloudy afternoon, high temperature 62. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy with a low of 47. Tomorrow, mostly sunny early, then becoming cloudy and breezy, the high 66. We're at 55 right now. This is WYLL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. We are the listener-supported broadcasting service at the College of Media at Illinois.